You know, you cannot be too Jewish.
Thank you. I couldn't possibly agree more.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Professor Mark Kligman, the director of the new Lowell Milken Center for Music of the American Jewish Experience at UCLA. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's almost the end of 2020, and well, good riddance. It's been a year to forget for most of us. Truncated, delimited, restricted, strange, weird, bizarre, lonely. Pick your own adjectives, but golly, it certainly wasn't a good year, now was it? Normally in this final Too Jewish show of the secular year, we do a little reviewing, or at least have a couple of top 10 lists of the best things that happened in the previous year. But for the life of me, I'm not sure I can come up with 10 great things that happened in 2020. Among the many lousy things that occurred in 2020, besides the coronavirus pandemic, there were the deaths of some truly outstanding rabbis and Jews, including Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz and Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, both titans of our own Jewish world. In the midst of all the tragedy this year, it was possible even to miss these very important losses. So, in a year with so much lousy taking place every day, where do you go to find good things? Well, okay, as a sports fan born in Los Angeles, I can name two really good things at least. The Lakers won the NBA championship, albeit in October of all months, and the Dodgers finally won baseball's World Series after a 32-year drought, although they had to do it in Texas of all places, where the whole series was played. Anyway, for me, that's 2 and 1 on the list. I suppose if I had to make a top 10 list, assuming we can find 10, here's how it would read from 10 up to 3, since I already named my top 2, those Dodgers and Lakers championships. So here we go, the bottom 8 of the top 10 things that happened in 2020. Number 10, Israel's normalization of relations with Sudan. Number 9, Israel's normalization of relations with Morocco. Number 8, Israel's normalization of relations with Bahrain. Number 7, Israel's normalization of relations with the United Arab Emirates. That was a bit of a cheat, but still, that gave me 4. Number 6, a U.S. election that had the highest votership in over a century and was conducted honestly and fairly in spite of many challenges. Number 5, the fast development of the Moderna vaccine and the start of its distribution after incredible international cooperation. Number 4, the fast development of the Pfizer vaccine and the start of its distribution after incredible international cooperation. And number 3, the technological magic of Zoom and Facebook Live that allowed us to stay in contact with our families and friends in spite of the isolation necessitated by COVID-19. And that made it possible for some form of school and work to continue from our dens, bedrooms, and basements. It wouldn't be right to have a big rim shot here, because to be honest, 2020 wasn't exactly a rim shot kind of year. More of a sad trombone kind of year, right? Anyway, while you're at home on New Year's Eve this year, just remember, you don't have to pay for a fancy restaurant meal. You aren't fighting through crowds. You're not worried about sobriety checkpoints. And nobody is shooting off guns in the air that drop bullets that can actually hit you. And that there is something major to look forward to this coming year of 2021, God willing. And that's this. If your name isn't Jeff Bezos or Fred Zoom, it's a good bet that 2021 will be a heck of a lot better year for you. And so to play us in this morning, here's an Israeli hit of about 4 years ago called Chaim Shelanu Tutim, Our Lives Are Strawberries, which basically lists everything wrong in Israeli society back then, but concludes our lives are great, thank God, in spite of it all. You know, we would trade right now for those problems of just 4 years ago, wouldn't we?
החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו
תותים.
שעות של תור בדואר,
קשה,
קשה לגמור פה תואר,
קשה,
והמצב בנוער,
קשה,
קשה לשיר כמו זוהר, להתעורר בבוקר,
קשה,
להיכנס לכושר, הדלק שוב ביוקר, והמוזה היא בעוצר, שחיתות בכל שבועיים, פיגוע כל יומיים, הארנונה בשמיים, והטסט בירושלים, כשבעל הבית נושה וגם הבוס נוקשה, אז הפכתי למורשה, לא הכל פרר ומשה, אבל אין לנו זכות בכלל להתלונן, הכל תפוך המסע וברוך השם, כי החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו היידה. הילד קם בלילה, והאישה לא די לה, קונה כל מה שבא לה,
קשה
לשוף למעלה, קשה לסגור את החודש, קשה לדבוק בקודש, חיים שלמים בלי שורש, אין ערק ויש יורש, הסוללה עוזלת והתקרה נוזלת, המדינה גוזלת והממשלה פוזלת, שוטף פלוס 60, העומס בכבישים קשה עם המיסים וכולנו אדישים, אז אין לנו זכות בכלל להתלונן, הכל צפוך חמסה וברוך השם, כי החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו תותים. פתחנו פג'ורה, כיתרנו מספיק, כפינו טובה, עכשיו נחזור אחורה אל הבסיס, זמן לומר תודה,
תודה,
תודה על הרוח,
תודה
שאין לי זמן לנוע,
תודה,
תודה על השבת,
תודה
על שני בנים ובת,
תודה,
תודה על כל היופי,
תודה
על הזכות לראות את מסי,
תודה
על התיקון, על המהות,
תודה,
תודה על הילדות,
תודה.
אין לנו זכות בכלל להתלונן, הכל תפוך חמסה וברוך השם, כי החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו
תותים,
החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו תותים, החיים שלנו.
That was Hanan Ben-Ari and his hit Chaim Shelanu Tutim from 4 years ago. Our lives are strawberries. May those problems he fetches about be our only problems in 2021. When we come back in a moment on To Jewish, our guest, Professor Mark Kligman, explains what the new Lowell Milken Center for Music of the American Jewish Experience is and what it's like to direct the first such center in the entire world. Find out when we return in a moment here on To Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua Yaqui Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, events, and social justice actions this winter. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha's synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance of the Foothills Mall. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone in normal times in our own building, not in the mall. In these days of continuing coronavirus tsaros, a small group can join in person every Friday night and Saturday morning. Just email me at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org. That's BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. Or join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning Shabbat services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, BEITSIMCHA Tucson. We'll hold our services with full music, our virtual experience weekly, as well as our in-person masked and careful attendees. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are on Zoom, and many are in blended formats, too. You can access those by emailing me, rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson. Many of those classes are available, as well as our wonderful religious school in blended formats. Some are live and some are on Zoom. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught on Zoom as well as live, and, of course, all of our services, live and on Facebook, go to www.beitsimchatucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, the newest and fastest growing Jewish community in southern Arizona, in its exciting beginning years. We are delighted to welcome to Jewish this morning our guest, Professor Mark Kligman, is the Chair of Ethnomusicology, Professor of Ethnomusicology, Mickey Katz Endowed Chair in Jewish Music, the director of the Lowell Milken Fund for American Jewish Music, and I probably forgot seven or eight other titles. You are the director of the new Lowell Milken Center for the Music of the American Jewish Experience. Tell us how that came about and what this means.
Hi, thank you very much. It's great to be with you. The new center is a center that will focus on the research, performance, and engagement for Jewish music. And it came about through a relationship that we built with Lowell Milken. And through the Lowell Milken Family Foundation, we were able to establish a series of activities over the last 3 years, from 2017 to last spring. And we are worked to incorporate the study of Jewish music and its performance into the world of the UCLA community and in the LA community. And we deemed it was very beneficial, and we're very proud that we were able to develop this new relationship to create a center which will make this project permanent, and we look forward to a really bright future.
So for a lot of our listeners, a center sounds like a physical place. That's not exactly the definition here.
Well, it's both it is and it isn't, in a sense that we have a particular office that we work out of, but the way that the university structure is in the complex world of a large university like UCLA is that there are a lot of activities that may happen in the music department, in School of Theater and Film and Television, through musical theater, through Jewish studies. And our engagement is to work very closely with all the many different partners and activities throughout the university and bring that all together. So we're, in a sense, as a center, the node of trying to generate activity and coordinate activity that's happening in many different places.
This has been such a strange time from March till now, and it'll be weird for a while longer. How has that affected your activities?
Indeed, it has been a very difficult time. And the way that it's affected our activities is that we've had to move everything online. So last spring, we had a series of activities that we called the Jewish Music Masterclass, where we had composers and leading musicians talk about their work. And it was a chance for us to really work with people throughout the United States, people located on the East Coast, West Coast, and throughout, and to try and develop communities that are national as well. So we're trying to find what are the informative ways that we can communicate aspects of Jewish music to grow people's understanding, to give them the context, nuances, and stories in Jewish music. And doing that online, over Zoom, has proven to be very effective for us. One of the biggest programs that has been successful is our partnership with the Cantors Assembly. And we did a series ending October, and we'll be concluding this upcoming Monday, that we call Cantors on Record. And Cantors, part of the Conservative Assembly, the Cantors Assembly, who've recorded on the Milton Archive, we feature each of those cantors through playing the music and also talking to them about their experience in recording it and what they bring to the Jewish music that they sing. And those stories of those cantors have been really rich stories, and we've grown the audience now to over 500 people each week that are attending this live, and of course, wow, we put it online, and other people are able to enjoy it.
Fantastic way of connecting people. We will talk much more with Professor Mark Kligman about Jewish music and the new Lowell Milken Center for Music of American Jewish Experience when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, jewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store, is a very popular podcast. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. Over 100,000 downloads on Podbean. You know, the best song about our isolation this year came from Israeli multi-platform music star Ishai Ribo and his heartfelt song, Keter Melucha, The Crown of Royalty. It explains how, in the weeks between various Torah portions this last year, things went from normal with weddings and gatherings to shut down. What, God, he asks, do you want us to learn from this separation? How can we unite during our loneliness? Until again, in song, we can give you, God, a royal crown. Ishai Ribo and his song, Keter Melucha.
בין תרומה לתצבר, יום הולדת קצת משונה, הכל רגיל כאן לכאורה, במקל ואהבה. בין תצבר לכי תיסה, אסתר פורים משתה שמחה, מי יחנה ומי יישא. ומי יישא בתוצאה, בין כי תישא לוואי יקל, עולם מפסיק להתקהל, להשתתק, להסתגר, ישמעאל אדום וישראל, בין וואי יקל לפקודה, אין איש בעיר ובשדה, כבר אין מול מי להתנהל. מגדל בבל שוב מתבלבל. ומה אתה רוצה שנבין מזה? איך מתרחקים ומתקרבים בכאב הזה? רוצה לחיות אותך ולא להיות לבד. ומה אתה רוצה שנלמד מזה? ואיך נדע להתאחד בפירוד הזה? עד שניתן לך כתר מלוכה, כתר מלוכה. ב בין פקודי לבייקה כולנו באותה סירה אביב הגיע פסח בא ואיתו תקווה רבה שתקרא את רוע הגזרה לך דודי לקראת קלה כבר אין לנו כוחות יותר להתמודד להילחם מה אתה רוצה שנבין מזה? איך מתרחקים ומתקרבים בכאב הזה? רוצה לחיות אותך ולא להיות לבד מה אתה רוצה שנלמד מזה? ואיך נדע להתאחד בפירוד הזה? עד שניתן לך כתר מלוכה שנבין מזה איך מתרחקים ומתקרבים בכאב הזה רוצה לחיות אותך ולא להיות לבד ומה אתה רוצה שנלמד מזה ואיך נדע להתאחד בפירוד הזה עד שניתן לך כתר מלוכה כתר מלוכה
That was Ishai Rebo's beautiful and evocative song for the past 2020 year about how things move from ordinary to isolated and how we can bring to God at the end of all of this, distantly visible now after a long vaccine process, our own gifts. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we've been talking about how so many Jews in America say their families are from Russia, but they really mean the Pale of Settlement and a variety of different places. Last week, we talked about the Litvak-Galitzianer divide a little bit and those centers. Ukraine is where actually a lot of Jews' families come from, and Ukraine brings to mind a lot of things. Tragically, in particular, the great terrible Cossack pogrom, the Kishinev pogrom, led by Khmelnytsky, who's still a great hero in Ukraine. But there's a lot of Jews in Ukraine now. So what's going on there? It's a complicated story, isn't it?
Very. So a lot of Jews, one way or another, survived the war. They were either hidden by non-Jews or they went into the remote countryside. And they and their children may not have had much in the way of Jewish education, but recently, particularly in the past 20 years, there's been a renewal in all these places of Jewish life, partially fueled by Chabad. And in the bigger centers, the big urban centers like Kiev, also all other mainstream movements of American Jewish life are present and active. And
good friend of mine was the first Reform rabbi in Kiev some years ago, a past guest on the program for a number of times, Rabbi David Wilfond. You know, lots of stuff going on. Gingy indeed.
Yeah, I know him.
Of course.
Okay, you mentioned Chisinau, which is actually not in Ukraine. It's in Moldova. It's the capital of Moldova, and today it's called Chisinau. But Moldova is a good example of a place where there's a so-called frozen conflict. And that is that the country is geographically divided by a major river called the Dniester to the north and east of which live Russian speakers, and to the south and west of which live Romanian speakers. And lots of people in those two populations would like to rejoin their mother countries. The Transnistrians in particular, the Russian speakers, have on and off for years had a separatist movement that was more or less violent. Right now, that conflict is sort of in the freezer. Unlike the conflict between the Russian speakers in Ukraine east of the Dnieper River.
Dnieper.
The other one's the Dniester, right. They're very similar names. And west of that river are Ukrainian speakers. That conflict, unfortunately, isn't frozen. Occasionally it gets worse. It's interesting that when you're in the capital of Ukraine, which is a very mixed city between Russians and Ukrainians, and everybody's pretty much bilingual there, you don't get the sense that a couple hundred miles away, there's a war raging between the same two populations who managed to live in complete harmony in Kiev. But the concept of frozen conflicts is a difficult one to grasp. But until quite recently, the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict had been frozen for 20 years. And then it suddenly erupted into this bloody massacre. And it's a useful lesson to all of us, whether we're in foreign affairs or not, that frozen conflicts have a nasty habit of sort of going on auto defrost and erupting unless the issues are really resolved and there's like a move forward to build a new kind of peace together. If the conflict is just put into the freezer, someday it's going to pop out.
You know, it's a good reminder for those of us who care about Israel. It's got kind of frozen conflicts on a couple of its borders right now and maybe internally as well. So
I'm not sure how frozen any of those are.
That's a good point. Thanks, Tom. Listen, I hope that 2021 is much better for you and for all of us.
Amen.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A grandson asks his wealthy old Zadie Morris how he made his money. Morris fingers his wool vest and says, "Well, son, it was 1932, the depth of the Great Depression. I was down to my last nickel. So I invested that nickel in an apple. I spent the whole day polishing the apple, and at the end of the day, I sold that apple for 10 cents. Next morning, I invested those 10 cents in two apples. I spent the whole day polishing them. I sold them at 5 o'clock p.m. for 20 cents, both. I continued this system for a month, at the end of which I'd accumulated the rich sum of $1.60. And then my wife's Uncle Benny died and left us $2 million. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, a special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and inherit two, four, some number of millions of dollars. And now a word of Torah. This week we complete the story of Joseph and his great father Jacob, also known as Israel, with a final Torah portion in the book of Genesis, Vayechi. It begins with a description of the death of Jacob, and perhaps even more importantly, the final blessings that Jacob gives to his many sons. But one of the most interesting aspects of this section is a brief episode in which Joseph, who knows that his father is dying, brings his own two sons, Jacob's grandsons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to him for a blessing. In keeping with an ongoing theme in Bereishit in Genesis, Jacob blesses the younger son Ephraim before the older son Manasseh. When Joseph tries to correct his dad, Jacob assures him that his blessing order is intentional. Both boys will father great tribes, but the younger will exceed the older in accomplishment. We still use this blessing every Friday night. We bless our own sons today, both in temple and at home. In the Bible, we always expect the older child to succeed at a greater level than the younger, to receive a bonus for being firstborn. But repeatedly throughout Genesis, the younger child ends up excelling the older and receiving a greater portion of the inheritance. It's as if there's a clear message here. God has a plan that goes beyond the conventions of human society. As Paul Simon once sang, "God only knows, God makes his plan, the information unavailable to the mortal man." For us, this consistent reversal of traditional roles teaches a different lesson. In the negative formulation of this, Shakespeare had Caesar say, "The fault, dear Brutus, lies not in our stars, but in ourselves." That is, we can't attribute our own failures to our birth order, or our horoscope, or even our parents. Life happens. But how we respond to it is up to us, not our birth order. What we can do is control our own actions and our own choices. We each have the ability to shape our own destinies. Like Ephraim, or like Joseph himself or his own father Jacob, we may be born into less favor and fortune than others, but we can make our own way to success and goodness and to God if we work, care, and continue to seek holiness. When we return on Too Jewish, our guest, Professor Mark Kligman, explains what a new Center for American Jewish Music is able to do during a pandemic and just how important Jewish music is and can be. Find out all about it when we return on Too Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
As has long been expected, the tottering Israeli government coalition collapsed last week, bringing on the fourth round of national elections in just 2 years. The new election date is tentatively March 23rd, 2021. In our I told you so department, this all happened before Bibi Netanyahu had to hand over the prime minister's post to his coalition partner and political rival, Benny Gantz. This continues the long Israeli tradition of supposed power-sharing coalitions disintegrating before the prime minister has to actually hand over the office in the next so-called rotation of leadership. Bibi Netanyahu has now been prime minister of Israel for over 10 years, and he has managed to cling to power this time in spite of his upcoming trial on corruption charges. Trials, I should say, it's more than one. The Likud blue-white coalition government failed to pass a budget for 2020. That was a bit overdue, wasn't it? Or 2021, which triggered an automatic new election for Knesset. Until a new government is formed, Benjamin Netanyahu will remain in office as a caretaker prime minister. Benny Gantz may find himself without a party at all, as the blue-white party appears ripe for collapse, too. Furious that Gantz accepted being part of Netanyahu's government at all. It does seem like Netanyahu hoodwinked Gantz pretty comprehensively through this misalliance, giving him smaller perks like being defense minister, but never intending to pass the prime ministership over. But there are major defections from Likud, too, including Gideon Saar, a longtime Likud supporter of Bibi, who has now formed his own party to combat the cult of personality that attaches itself to Netanyahu. Saar's party is called Hatikva HaChadasha, which translates to the New Hope, and sounds like a Star Wars movie, actually. All we know for certain is that in the midst of this pandemic, Israel will conduct yet another election in March, all while Netanyahu's corruption charges are being tried in court. It will be entertaining, if nothing else. In South America, Argentinian Jewish groups were expecting a long-awaited victory last week, finally, in the 26-year struggle for justice over the 1994 AMIA Jewish Center terrorist bombing. They figured there was enough evidence to convict the car mechanic accused of preparing the deadly car bomb. But an Argentine federal court acquitted the defendant, Carlos Telodin, in a second trial in the case. The court will not detail its decision until March 26, offering only a one-line decision, acquit Carlos Alberto Telodin for the facts that he was accused, said Judge Andres Basso. The AMIA and DIA Jewish umbrella group said they will appeal. According to the indictment, Telodin filled a Renault van, the engine of which was found in the rubble after the explosion, with explosives. He left it in a parking lot and then handed it over to unidentified individuals who carried out the bombing, which killed 85 and injured 300. The evidence collected is more than enough to achieve the degree of certainty and to convict the accused in order of the crime of malicious havoc in the form of an explosion followed by deaths attributable to malicious intent, said an AMIA attorney during the trial. The group had called for a punishment of 20 years in prison. This decision is the culmination of a protracted struggle to find closure in a case that has outraged the Argentine Jewish community for decades now. Telodin was arrested just a week after the July 1994 attack, along with five Buenos Aires police officers who were allegedly involved in the operation. The officers spent 10 years in prison. It was uncovered that Telodin was paid $400,000 in 1995 for his cooperation in the trial, leading a judge to dismiss the evidence collected in the case. Telodin earned his own law degree in prison and practiced when he was released. AMIA and DIA appealed, arguing that the evidence collected before the illegal payment should be considered valid. The Supreme Court agreed in 2009 and ordered a new trial for Telodin, but the trial only started last year, 10 years after that original order. The court's decision shamefully consolidates a path of immunity, an Amy spokesperson said. It adds more pain and generates an inexplicable confusion, taking into account the evidence presented. Iran and Hezbollah have long been linked to the attack on the Jewish center in Buenos Aires. Based on the investigation of the late prosecutor Alberto Nisman, Jewish, six Iranians and one Lebanese have been on Interpol's most wanted list since 2007. Nisman was later murdered in Buenos Aires in a case that still hasn't been resolved. Argentina signed a controversial memorandum of understanding with Iran back in 2013 under then-President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, stating that the two countries would jointly investigate the attack. Critics said it violated the executive branch's principles of independence in Argentina. Nisman, who alleged that Argentina's president and other government ministers covered up Iran's role in the bombing, was found dead in his Buenos Aires apartment in January 2015, as reported here on Too Jewish, just hours before he was going to present his allegations to Congress. His death was ruled a likely suicide, but Argentinian federal appeals court later called it murder. The Iran-Argentina agreement was voided in December 2015, in the first week of Mauricio Macri's presidency. In 2019, on the 25th anniversary of the Amiya bombing, Argentina finally listed Hezbollah as a terrorist group. Justice still has not been done in Buenos Aires. And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Professor Mark Kligman is the director of the new Lowell Milken Center for Music of the American Jewish Experience at UCLA. He's also the chair of ethnomusicology, professor of ethnomusicology, and has the Mickey Katz Endowed Chair in Jewish Music. Mark, we've been talking about the Lowell Milken Center. What is your goal for it in the larger sense once, you know, God willing, the vaccine gets around and everything opens up? Do you anticipate creating a lot of live performances of Jewish music? Do you have a particular goal?
Put quite simply, our goal is to create a home for Jewish music, to really be a place that Jewish music can thrive and grow. Unfortunately, Jewish music in a full form doesn't really have a home. We do have wonderful training programs, one that I worked at for 20 years at Hebrew Union College through its Debbie Friedman School of Sacred Music, and other programs at other seminaries, and programs that really train cantors, which are wonderful ways that sacred music is growing and evolving. But putting music into a academic, research-oriented university is my effort to really give it a home that will go on into perpetuity. So our goal is really threefold. It's to do research, and we want to bring scholars together to share their research, do new research, and move in new directions. The second is performances of Jewish music in creative ways and diversifying the type of styles and genres that people are hearing in Jewish music. And the third thing is through education. And we want to expand people's knowledge of Jewish music, not just listening to the music, but also knowing where the music really comes from. So those are sort of our three pillars in which we really want to engage with people to help shape Jewish music. We do hope after the pandemic that we will have our programs redeveloping in person. One program that we had this year just before the pandemic started was on March 1st, which is a Los Angeles Jewish Music Festival. And at that festival, we had local artists, some young musicians, some who grow out of the Iranian or Syrian community, other local cantors, and other musicians we brought in, like Nefesh Mountain, and colleagues of mine who are pianists and other performers, all get together and each in different genres and contexts perform Jewish music. And we had students from our musical theater program at UCLA did a whole program on Jews in musical theater and Jewish themes in musical theater. And the evening concluded with a program we called Titans of Jewish Music, where we had our UCLA orchestra and choir do works by LA-based composers who were born in Vienna. The first work was the Passover Psalm by Erich Korngold, and Korngold is really well known as being a very important orchestra composer for films from the 1940s and 1950s. The second was a work by Eric Zeisel, some biblical songs that he wrote. And the third was a work that was commissioned by Rabbi Jacob Sonderling at the Fairfax Temple in 1938 of Schoenberg, a really well-known 20th century composer, and it was his Kol Nidre.
By the way, I should note, you work out of Schoenberg Hall, I think, quite a lot. So
the Schoenberg name works, it runs very deep at UCLA, because Schoenberg
very much so. Yep.
At UCLA for many years, and Schoenberg's grandson married Eric Zeisel's daughter, and the Schoenberg and Zeisel family are just very important fixtures in the LA Jewish music community. But through that program and through this festival, we were able to reach hundreds of people. We had 250 students singing in our combined choirs. We had 75 or 85 students or plus or somewhere in those neighborhoods who are in the orchestra to do this music. And it was really an effort to really have Jewish music embraced through our School of Music and to perform it. And in addition to that, throughout the day, before the big orchestral concert, when many of these other activities were happening, we had some simultaneous events where some people could take workshops and learn new repertoires of Jewish music, be it, you know, music that was Sephardi, Mizrahi, or Ashkenaz. And at the same time, we also had a lot of the artists tell their stories that we called Jam Talks, Jewish American Music Talks, where musicians really got to talk about what they do in Jewish music and what Jewish music means to them. So that really embraces all the different modalities that we really want people to encounter, where we want people to encounter Jewish music, not only in just hearing the music, but also ways in which people can hear who's making the music and what they're doing, and ways that they can engage in learning new things.
I had the privilege a couple of years ago being in Krakow for their Jewish music festival, in which they have not only all kinds of klezmer and Eastern European and Yiddish, but also Sephardi and Mizrahi and a variety of other things. I have to say, like, a Jewish music festival is so dynamic and exciting. It's a really wonderful opportunity. And I hope after the pandemic, this only grows, because LA is a great place for a terrific Jewish music festival like that, that explores every aspect of Jewish music. If I were to pin you down, what's your favorite kind of Jewish music?
It's hard to pin it down specifically, other than to say that I like eclectic Jewish music that really combines the past and the present, things where the old and the new are fused together, and ways that musicians might do that in some of my, you know, favorite things that I listen to would be Sephardi Mizrahi musicians that are taking some older melodies but giving them a very, very fresh take and a very creative musical form, or the way that that might work with klezmer music. I think that there's music that speaks to me the most deeply, music that I heard growing up, which is cantorial music with a choir. One of my earliest, you know, memories as a child, being 4 or 5 years old, was walking in with my grandfather to our synagogue in the San Fernando Valley in L.A. And I didn't walk in with my parents, because my parents were singing in the choir. And I just remember walking in, hearing this glorious music, and knowing that my parents were singing in that choir always meant something very, very deep to me. And I think that for me personally, you know, my father grew up as a religious Jew in Chicago, my mother more in the secular Yiddish culture environment, but my parents met each other and really built a wonderful life for me and my siblings. And I really got to see religious Jewish life, the world of secular Yiddish culture, and realize that how much of my life is really shaped by all these early experiences of really trying to understand Jewish music, to be involved with it, to work with the people who make it, to find ways to explain it. You know, pre-pandemic, one of the joys of my life was that there's a synagogue in the city, Young Israel, North Beverly Hills, with a wonderful hazan, Netanel Baran. And I conduct the choir, it's an all-male choir because it's an Orthodox synagogue. And for me, just the opportunity to just be able to bring people together and to make music, and when we were able to do that together in services, is so meaningful to me, because to be able to take from our tradition to really express the beautiful liturgy of our tradition through music, it really would be the most exciting to me.
That's a beautiful answer. As a cantor, I'm only slightly biased in that direction myself, but what a wonderful answer. In the course of creating this academic center for Jewish music, some point or another, you always get asked, okay, what is Jewish music? How would you define it as an academic, as an ethnomusicologist, as head of really the revolutionary new centers of Jewish music at UCLA?
That's a great question. And I think that I, like, you know, many scholars, try not to define it as we might trap ourselves into things. And in one of the meaningful conversations that I've had with Paul Milken, who's just invested so much into Jewish music through the Milken Archives.
By the way, we should talk about briefly the Milken Archives before you finish not answering my question.
maybe we'll get to that in a second, but to answer your question, the conversation was, in the name of our center, do we put Jewish music together? And the way that we intentionally named the center for Music of American Jewish Experience was to really identify the fact that it's hard to define Jewish music, and to presume that we know how to do that would be something that we really don't want to do. So I would say that to define Jewish music, it really is many different things. It's many different things, both historically and at present. It really encompasses a vast geographic range, and there's a certain way in which Jewish music collapses time. Because when we're singing biblical words, we're singing liturgy that's been formed, you know, could be 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. We're engaged with the historic tradition of Judaism, and we're putting it at the present, in the moment, in an aesthetic way that we really are making those choices of. So I had the wonderful pleasure of working very closely with many Syrian cantors, cantors whose families were from Aleppo, Syria. And I did my doctorate in the music of Syrian Jews in Brooklyn. And just hearing from them the experiences and the stories that they have from their family prior to coming to America, by their family's history, spending hundreds or thousands of years in Aleppo, Syria, you know, their stories is just as relevant as the story of my ancestors who lived in different parts of Eastern Europe. And if there's anything that Jewish music has in common with each other, despite different aesthetics, that people who are committed to it, who play it, who write it, who are engaged in it, it's that it's an expressive entity that's a part of themselves. It's an expression that they really want to give to the world. So it's the emotive quality of a Jewish expression, ultimately, that is Jewish music, which can't be specifically defined by a particular sound, but we can say in a particular area at a particular time that music, cantorial music, all was formed within that context, engaged with it as time goes on.
And there's an authenticity to each of those different traditions, even though they do sound quite different. I want to thank Professor Mark Cleveland for a great visit. I just did want to mention, in addition to this new Milken Center, Milken has been doing a great deal to create incredible archives of great recordings of Jewish music for quite a long time now. And I assume there'll be a connection between the center and those archival recordings.
Indeed, there is. We work very closely with the foundation, and working with the chief operating officer, Dr. Jeff Janesco, from the Milken Archives. And we're working to take interviews and the recordings and things they've done and contextualize them and try and find ways to take the wonderful recordings they've done and put them in the classroom and build public programs. So part of the goal is to help ensure the archives continued path to really reach people. And we hope to make more recordings to extend what the archive is.
Again, I want to thank Professor Mark Kleedman for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about the Milken Center, about the UCLA programs?
So they can go to our website, which is a little bit of a long one, but it is schoolofmusic.ucla.edu/Lowell Milken Center, M-A-J-E. Probably the easiest thing to do is to just put into a Google or put into a browser Lowell Milken Center, UCLA, and then it will easily pop up.
Yeah, and add music in there somewhere in your Google search. Mark, thank you so much. Mazel tov on the creation of this remarkable center and all the great work you're doing for Jewish music.
So good to be with you. Thank you.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Our playout this morning comes from the Maccabees, their cover of Nurit Hirsch's Bashana Haba'a, In the Year to Come. This year will be so much better than last year. It's an a cappella celebration of the potential for this coming year, recorded using the magic tricks of remote recording and serious digital editing we've all become experts at in this weird year. Heck, next year has got to be better, right? Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Two Jewish will be Eric Levitz, founder of the AZ House Jerusalem, a remarkable recovery program for addiction in Israel, and one of the winners of the 2020 Kohan Memorial Foundation Awards. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a secular Shana Tova, a good, healthy, and safe new year, a good week, and a week, we pray, of health and of peace.
בשנה הבאה נשב על המרפסת ונזכור ציפורים נודדות ילדים בחופשה ישחקו טוב פסל בין הבית לבין השדות עוד תראה כמה טוב יהיה בשנה הבאה We'll sing together and the distance will just disappear. And the children will smile in a world that's gotten better. So let's bring in a healthy new year. Wait and see what a world there can be. And we know that there's always tomorrow. Oh dire, come on, Toby, yeah. Bashana haba, nifros kapot yadahim mul haor hanigar halava. Anafa levana, tifros kaor knafaim vehashemesh tizraf betoch. Bashana ba, oh, dear.
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.